On the Record
on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
We'll start by talking to someone whose work you're probably familiar with, even if you don't know his name or you wouldn't even recognise him on the street. Ross Atkins has been doing explainer videos for the BBC for a couple of years now, originally as part of his show Outside Source on the BBC News Channel, but you'll probably have seen some of them making rounds online because they now routinely get millions of views for each individual video. And what's remarkable about them is their simplicity, because it's just one guy staring down the barrel of a camera for 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 minutes at a time, explaining in enough detail, but also in a broad, accessible way, everything you need to know about whatever story is making the news that day. He's had a real breakout 2021, and when I spoke to him a couple of days ago, I started by asking for his reflections on the year that it's been for himself and for the BBC.
Well, it's been a year that's definitely not ending as any of us would have hoped. Of course, we're all aware of what's happening with Omicron, and I think that we can all recall how we felt going into Christmas last year. And I think, you know, most people were expecting some further restrictions once we were through Christmas, and sure enough, that followed with a lockdown. So it's a somber and a challenging end to the year. More broadly, you know, for the BBC, from purely a news point of view, I think that for the BBC, I think we would feel that has gone well. We have been able to continue making our programmes and continue to manage the pandemic in a way that keeps colleagues safe, but also we hope still allows us to make useful and engaging news programming and news content. So from that point of view, I can't speak for anyone else, but I feel very lucky that through this challenging year, I have still been able to come into work to see dear colleagues, to work with them and hopefully produce news that's still been of value despite the additional practical challenges that there have been.
I noticed that you didn't directly mention yourself too much in that first answer because professionally speaking, you must consider it to be a standout year for you because you've been doing your longer explainer videos and they've been going out on Outside Source and on the BBC World News Channel for a while. But this seems to have been the year where that kind of long form explainer video that you've been doing, that they really seem to have found a broader audience this year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think all of us who work on Outside Source have been, thrilled to see the amount of traction that our videos have got. They very much build on a style of explanatory journalism that we've been working on for a few years now. We launched Outside Source back in 2014, but we took a couple of decisions about 18 months ago, which have really started to bear fruit. And the biggest one of all was Outside Source used to be associated with this big touchscreen that I had, and I kind of danced around in front of it, pulling in all the different relevant information. And while we very much like that approach to telling stories, an approach based on collation, an approach based on giving a story a lot of time, more than it might get in a traditional news bulletin, you know, I couldn't escape the fact that our numbers, our digital numbers, weren't what I would hope they would have been. And, you know, my boss, she's not my boss anymore, she's since left the BBC, but my boss a couple of years ago said to me, you know, would you consider getting rid of the touchscreen? You know, what would Outside Source look like if you get rid of the touchscreen? And, you know, I went away and thought about it. And the conclusion I and others on the team came to was that if we really wanted our journalism to work for people on social media, watching through their phones, generally consuming in a more digital fashion, we would have to change how the program looked, because bluntly, you couldn't read anything on the touchscreen on a mobile phone. And so we got rid of the thing that arguably our format was best known for. And instead, we built this brand new suite of graphics that allows us to replicate what the screen gave us. But this time, everything is much bigger on the screen and it sits next to me. So if you're watching on your phone, you can see it more easily. But of course, you'll know this as well. You know, you can have the best theory in the world until you do something in practice. You can't know if it's going to work for audiences. That's not a guarantee. So, yeah, it's been quite something to see the numbers just move up and up and up through the year. You know, there was even at the end of last year, we were doing, you know, 1 million, sometimes 2 million views on a video, which is by most news organization standards, very, very large. But now we're even moving beyond that. I think the most watched video now is edging onto 6 million, which is kind of in territory I don't think any of us ever imagined we would reach. So yeah, we're delighted that people are enjoying them.
And what do you think then is behind the way that they've taken off this year? I mean, obviously, as you've mentioned, the format and the way that you've stripped out some of the bells and whistles maybe and gone back to basics. But why do you think that they've just taken off this year more than any other?
So I think there's a couple of reasons why they're doing particularly well. One is that we're all surrounded by so much information, and I think we all need some help navigating that information. And sometimes we'll be aware of stories, but for quite understandable reasons, we've not been able to keep up with every last twist and turn. And we're looking for help to bring us up to date. We're interested, but there's just too much all around us. And what I was finding operating within the more classic TV bulletin formats was that often you would give stories 3-4 maximum minutes per story. And I was just finding that just wasn't enough space to include all the things that I thought was relevant. So one thing we decided to experiment with was, well, let's not worry about the time so much. Let's just look at what is essential to understanding this story. What are the pieces of information, whether it's a clip or a fact check or a bit of context or some history or a map or whatever it might be, would change each time. But what are the essentials that people need to really understand how this story has played out and why it matters? And then we'll see where we end up in terms of length. And that change in mindset was really important. So I would hope that when you see one of my videos and you click on them, you know I'm going to give you a comprehensive rundown of both what's happened and why it matters. So I think that's one of the reasons. The second was I've tried to start writing these videos like I'm just telling you a story. So I've tried to ditch all of the more classic TV language and TV formats that we might use when telling stories. And I've tried to go right back to what are the facts here? What are the most essential things that we need? And then what is the most engaging way I can tell this story? And I spent quite a long time studying lots of different storytelling techniques, from podcasts to TV documentaries to comedians to how I listen to teachers in my children's classes. So there are lots of different examples, how people not just assembling the best information, but getting people to enjoy consuming it. Because you can have the best information in the world, but if you're not persuading people to stick with you, that's a problem. And one of the most flattering things that we hear repeatedly about these videos we make is they go, it was 7 minutes, but it was a quick 7 minutes. And for me, that's a sign that we're doing something right, that we're making you want to watch rather than just watching because you feel you ought to.
Well, they do, in fairness, those 7 minutes, they do absolutely fly. You would never think that you've been sitting down for 7 minutes watching some of them. But you've touched on something interesting there, though, because I imagine that when you try to exchange the idea of squeezing everything into a set time in a TV show, and then you start to do a video and you just decide that it takes as long as it takes to tell the story, that it must make each individual video a lot more work. So talk to us just about the how many resources and the personnel that goes into putting each one together.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong that a lot of work does go into them. So the process that I go through is that on most videos, we produce them on the day. Some we plan in advance, but the majority are produced on the day. So normally by mid-morning, late morning, we'll have been thinking about whether we're going to go for it, because we don't do it every day, just do it on merit. And then assuming that we have decided, a producer will be assigned to that. And that producer and I will work all day on it. So from lunchtime, and then we get onto our set at 6 p.m. and then we're live at 7 p.m. So we really have a kind of several hour run at it, which might sound like quite a lot, but actually to assemble this much information and then script around it and then also get it fact checked and signed off by lots of different people, that's not very long at all. So we kind of working very, very intensely from lunchtime onwards. And the process is essentially this. We look at the story and we say, what are the most essential pieces of information that we need on this story in whatever form they come? We put all those details into a single document. We then polish all of those elements so that they are in their most efficient form. So you might have a clip that's 20 seconds, but actually the 8-second bit is the thing the audience really needs to see. So we'll polish all the elements. And then once we're happy with the elements, that'll be then my job to think, well, how am I going to tell this story? And I start ordering those elements and writing around them in a way that hopefully takes you as a viewer from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. So I'm almost playing this out in front of you. And then once we've done that, this producer will review it again. Are they happy that it works? Are they happy it's factually accurate? And then if we're all happy, there's often a lot of toing and froing, it then goes to at least two senior journalists, One will be a generalist editor overseeing the program, and then another will be a BBC specialist on whatever that given subject is. They'll then both review the script. We then rehearse them at 6 o'clock. We inevitably make more changes because it's not flowing quite as much. And then we do it live at 7. So by the time that you're seeing that clip live on the TV or later on social media, that story has been through a lot of attention and a lot of rewrites and a lot of reordering. And I hope it's that which helps us get to a point where I can be particularly clear in explaining the story, but also where the story as it unfolds in front of you unfolds without any hitches. It takes you each step of the way.
Well, there's two things that really strike me about it. Firstly, I would never have thought that they could all be done in a day's work, that I would have thought that some of them would maybe such marathon things that they would often take a couple of days to pull together, maybe because you just need to go away and chase down some statistics.
So some do. To be clear, some do. So we do, you know, I did one recently about the debate around abortion rights in the US, for example. That we started work on a Tuesday and we did it on the Thursday night. So there are some of the longer form ones, which tend to be 6 to 10 minutes, where we do take a day or two longer.
The other thing that I was going to say is surprising when I hear you go through the whole process is that I would never have thought that they were all done live, because they all come across as being so polished. And because, to be honest, the delivery is always so fluent that you would always think that, oh, well, at least he's got the luxury of, if he, you know, if he double takes or if he swallows a fly, that he can have another go. But that they're all done in real time.
So they're almost all done in real time. Some of the longer ones are pre-recorded, and the ones that we do on the day, we would rehearse them, and we normally try and do a full take in rehearsal, and we save that. So we've got that in the bank. And then we'll do it live. And most of the time, if I'm on form and the directors who are brilliant are on form, we can get it in one go. But if I make a complete hash of a single line, we do have the rehearsal on tape as well, so we could flip in the error. And you'll know this as well as I do, that there is something about being live and knowing you've got a single take that can focus the mind and help you really do your best. But we do have a couple of, you know, I did one the other day where I can't remember what happened, but I just made a meal of it and just didn't get it right and got out of sync with the graphics. And we thought, well, we've spent all day working on this. We can't possibly just throw it in the bin. So we recorded it again. And we also have two editions of the program at 7 and 8. So we at least get two live runs at it as well.
This is a little peek behind the curtain that I think a lot of the listeners might not have realized, but certainly when I'm doing things for TV, I can absolutely affirm that when they are live and you don't have the safety net, things just seem to come together
honestly
a bit easier. And when you are doing the pre-record, that's when you flub.
I used to, when I started off at the BBC World Service Radio, we used to record the first minute before the news. We called it the billboard. And it's the first minute and you go, this is on the show, this is on the show. But before that, here's the news. And we used to pre-record it, and I would always have like two or three goes at it. And whenever, for whatever reason, I wasn't able to pre-record it, and they were just like, you're going to have to do it live, you'd almost always get it right. And so doing things live is, for whatever reason, very effective at focusing everyone's minds. But the thing that makes me happy listening to you is that one of the big ideas here was that, you know, the BBC and lots of news organizations, broadcast news organizations, we spend huge amounts of our budget on broadcasting. And that's, I'm not criticizing that. That's one of the main things that we do. But how much of all of that investment in our broadcasting is translating into digital content that can also be consumed by audiences in other places? And the answer is some, but perhaps we could be doing more. And so one of the big ideas that was behind the development of this video format was not, hey, BBC, give me loads of money to go and sit over there and pre-record a video a couple of times a week. The big idea was, I've already got a TV show. We've already got all these resources in place. If we can use them in a different way, we can still make a great TV show, which the live audience will enjoy, but we'll also create something which digital audiences can take as well.
I suppose it's sort of ironic then that when you talk about stripping out all the other extraneous stuff so that the videos would work on social media, that they've also gone full circle and the videos have now started to get included on BBC One. Because if you're watching BBC Breakfast on a weekday morning, that you'd often see them throw to a Ross Anderson video for 5 minutes.
Well, I got a call from Richard Frediardi, who's the editor of BBC Breakfast, or an email, I think it was, a few months back going, we've seen these pieces, we would love to run them. And of course I was, you know, absolutely thrilled and made up that he'd asked. And we started off by running our longer explainer on a Saturday morning. And then he said, well, we'll take some of the shorter ones during the week as well. And so, yes, you're right. BBC Breakfast is starting to run them. We run them in some World Service Radio news programs as well, and some other programs on BBC News Channel as well. So it's exciting to see people, colleagues, wanting to use what we're doing. And we don't take that for granted. We're very humbled by it. And, you know, we're working hard to keep, you know, repaying that faith.
Final question, Ross, before I do let you go. Is there any topic that you are desperately keen to try and summarize into a 6 or 7 minute thing that you just cannot get anyone editorially to buy into? Is there some little niche passion project, something that's grinding your gears that you desperately want to get out the door someday?
I don't know if there is. I feel like we spent a lot of time looking at American politics when Donald Trump was president and when he lost the election and all the aftermath that led up to the Biden inauguration. I feel like what's going on in American politics remains very important to the health of American democracy. And I think with the midterms coming up as well, there was perhaps an assumption in some quarters that, not the BBC, I hasten to add, but in some quarters that Biden's victory kind of ended the Trump story, ended that chapter in the Republican Party story. And there's a huge amount of evidence that, you know, that's not true. BBC has, of course, covered that multiple times, but I haven't done one of our explainers looking at the Republican Party and looking how it's responding to Donald Trump's ambitions and the ambitions of its voter base for a few months now. And that's quite high up on my list of things to do. And I think we have the anniversary of January the 6th coming round, the storming of the Capitol, and that may be an opportunity to evaluate where the Republican Party has got to in the aftermath of the Trump presidency, because it's a story about domestic American politics, of course, but for me, it's also a story about how major political parties evolve. And I think how America is remains a fundamental story that BBC News needs to keep telling to all of our listeners and viewers around the world. And I did a lot of American politics up to about the summer, but for one reason or another, mainly COVID, I've not done a huge amount since. And I'm definitely, you know, I've got a lot of energy to turn my mind to that.
Ross Atkins from the BBC speaking to me a couple of days ago. You'll find all of Ross's work on the BBC News Channel, on his programme Outside Source. And of course, he is also on Twitter. Twitter.com/BBC Ross Atkins is where you'll find him. Ross is only spelt with one S.
On the Record on News Talk. Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.